Just here trying to figure out the temperature in Israel. The weather is quite beautiful. The temperature is a little harder to gauge. How would you describe the temperature in the country right now?
Wow. I think, first of all, in general, the country is like it's going through a trauma. And the weather, like us, it's like one day it's warm and one day it's cold. One day it's sunny and the other day it's rainy. And I think it really symbolized the way that we really feel at the moment. There's certain incredible moments, like the moment where some of the hostages, we were able to release them, and they came back to the arms of their loving families. And then other days when we hear about, ones that were murdered, or soldiers that fell during battle, it's heartbreaking. I mean, so many broken families. And I think as Israelis, we still are trying to see how we recover from it.
So you mentioned you have three kids, so you're dealing with this obviously as a mother and also as a member of parliament. What are the pressures that you're under right now? Obviously, there's a contingent that just wants to get the hostages out no matter what. There's another contingent that wants to keep the military pressure on, all sorts of other stuff. There's a seemingly situation in the north that everyone's talking about.
Yeah. So the hostages will not return unless we put full pressure on Hamas. Hamas is not interested in bringing them back. They don't care for the Israelis, and they don't care for the lives of Palestinians. And so everything is sort of disposable for them. And so the only way to actually force them into the deal is to put more military pressure on them, for them to feel like we're literally on their tails. And until that happens, and meaning that this is the entrance to Rafiah and actually taking over the Philadelphia crossing, I don't think that they'll feel that pressure. We've heard that until the Ramadan there's going to be a ceasefire and a deal. It didn't come. It didn't come because Hamas have felt that the pressure is starting to go low. So my aim as a parliament member, as a mother, who wants to see those children, those babies, those mothers, those fathers and grandparents coming back to the loving arms of their family as quickly as possible. And the only way is to go and put enough pressure on Hamas to release them.
What do you think it is about Israelis that allow them to continue to function during this? I mean, I've only been here for a day and a half so far, but I think most countries, if this type of thing happened in America, like we would be so wildly dysregulated. You guys have been through many other versions of this, although this is the worst. But what is it about the spirit here that allows people to be functioning on the streets and be out on the beach and doing work and going completely insane?
We just don't have any other choice. I mean, since we were really young, we heard of bravery stories of our grandparents and our parents fighting for our freedom, for our liberty, for our safety. I mean, when I turned 18 is still a child, I went to the military service. I served as a combat soldier to defend my family, to defend my nation, to make sure that freedom and liberty is possible to my community, to my family, to my nation. And I think that when you're young and you understand that freedom, it has a heavy price. And it's your job to actually safeguard that. Then you live in a different reality than when freedom is sort of given to you on a silver platter. I served as a combat soldier for 3 years during the time of the Second Intifada. It was a very difficult time. I wish I could promise my three young daughters they would never have to serve in the army and that there will be peace. But understanding the reality, and on 7th of October, when literally Hamas has tried to commit another genocide of the Jewish people, I know that it's probably not going to be in their reality, and they will have to do the same as their mother to defend their nation and their family and their liberties. And understanding that, knowing that it is our job to safeguard that, it gives us a high purpose. And we don't have any other choice but to function under those conditions. Those are the values that we believe in. This is a society that we want to live in, a democracy that gives equal rights to everybody, to women, to minority. We want to live in a society with freedom of speech and free press, and that women, you know, are capable of doing everything. And to guard those values and that identity that is us, that we both share. We know that in a tough neighborhood like the Middle East, it is our job to actually guard it. And yes, we need to fight for it, and we're probably going to pay heavy prices to make sure that we're safe and secure, and that our values, our identity, and the way that we live is being guarded that way. Because, I mean, when you look now on the world and you understand that we are literally going into a clash of civilizations, it's not just in Israel, it's all around the world. Mm. We are fighting radical Islam that is trying to creep everywhere. This is this idea of eliminating the values that we believe in and live under a different rule and a different way of life. That's the idea. And that's what we're really fighting for. So here in the Middle East, it's very much more alive, you know?
Yeah.
It starts here. And so we're like the front gate, but we already see it creeping in almost everywhere else, in Europe, in North America, South America, Central America, Africa, Australia, Asia.
Are you shocked when you see that? You know, you were born actually in Canada, lived there for the first year of your life, then you came here, but you mentioned that your father is back there now, and some of the things that you see in Canada, you spent some time in Australia. I mean, when you see these rallies and the Hamas protests and all that stuff all over the West, does it shock you, or does it seem sort of obvious because we were lulled into sleep related to our freedoms?
I'll tell you what, I don't know if it's shock, if it really is, shocking is the right word. In a sense, there's been so many warning. I mean, with radical Islam, you need to have zero tolerance towards it. Every little creek you open up, you know, is a place where your freedom will be limited. Okay? And the West, Europe, North America, and many other countries have welcomed many people who have imported those ideas. And we've seen through the years how it's growing. You know, there's been attacks, terrorist attacks in many cities, in many countries. And yet the governments were lacking the understanding and we're not giving full force against those ideas and against more perpetrators like that. And the more it grows, you know, I can see many communities are now waking up, mm-hmm. hearing those chants in their backyards. You know, what I was shocked of was the younger generation in America on TikTok, mm-hmm. actually sympathizing with Osama bin Laden, a mass murderer whose idea is to completely eliminate your liberties and your freedom and to force you into a different way of life, how he humiliated, destroyed so many communities. And young Americans are sympathizing with that person who murdered so many people. That's shocking. And that's the lack of, you know, I don't know really what to say, whether it's education also at home, education in schools, the lack of government's involvement in sort of creating a zero tolerance towards those ideas. So I can't say those demonstrations are shocking. I can see more communities rising up. I hope that more people wake up and understand it's not just Israel's fight, but it's all of the free world fight against those ideas of radical Islam.
So I actually believe, especially from an American perspective, most people get it and understand that there's this radical minority that gets a lot of attention and they're loud and all of that stuff. But do you think, since they exist and since they get a lot of oxygen, that Israel could be doing something else on the PR front to win this war? Or to win the battle of ideas, let's say.
Wow. I think Israel can do more, but with whether it's going to be effective, I don't know. I mean, I have some criticism about, you know, the ideas of PR and how we need to manage, but to be honest, it's like a drop mm-hmm. of water in a sea. There are billions who are literally sharing lies, who are seeing media news outlets like Al Jazeera, Al Midyan, and many other channels who are literally lying.
I would
lying.
Include CNN and the New York Times in there too.
Yeah, it's not I just mean, Al Jazeera. That's the thing as well. I mean, yeah. If CNN gets its sources from Hamas, from a terrorist organization, this would be equivalent of getting their information from ISIS.
Yeah.
Okay? And spreading those ideas and some of these lies, I mean, you know, we're a small nation. We are probably one of the smallest minorities, you know, around the world. I mean, there's more, but, you know, we're a very small minority in the world. We don't have the capability of fighting so much propaganda, so much lies. Social media today, this is like fire in the field, mm-hmm. you know. Once it's already out, you know, no matter how many proofs, no matter how many evidence, no matter how many reports that will apologize for those things, it's not going to help. And another thing, a research that I was shown also shows that pro-Palestinians are extremely active. I mean, even if they're a minority in America, they actually make sure that they post on social media or share once or twice a day, while pro-Israelis are sort of sitting on the side and not posting. And so the volume and the way it looks on social mm-hmm. media is like this massive community in comparison to what, you know, pro-Israelis or anything like that.
What do you think the day after all of this looks like? If there's a day after, if hopefully the hostages come back, but even if some of them don't, at some point there's a day after where we're at right now. What do you think that looks like?
I think there can be a great opportunity. Whether our government and other international foreign governments will take that together and work together towards finding a solution, I'm not sure that's going to happen. I know I'm going to continue to fight for it. I mean, what we're fighting at the moment is we're fighting radical Islam. Generation and generation of Palestinians have been radicalized in their own education system. Most of it is being funded by the international community, mm-hmm. by America, Canada, Germany, the European Union. They can put a stop to that. They can bring in, for example, the Emirati education system, the Saudi education system that has gone through reform in order to try and build bridges between communities, that has started studying about the Second World War, you know? And that can make a difference, because I am a woman who believes in education. Mm-hmm. As long as the Palestinians continue to radicalize their youth since the age of zero, there's not going to be a different future. And so when we speak about UNRWA, this is the day after. These are things that we have to sit down now and discuss and make sure that we create a better future for Israelis and Palestinians. Without building those bridges, our future is not going to be different. There's going to be another conflict in 10, 20, 30 years. And that idea of coexistence, of living side by side, is something that you have to put a seed in at a very early age. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen tomorrow. It's going to take 2-3 generations, because the generation that's now been radicalized, that's not going to help. Mm-hmm. And there's not going to grow a leadership from there that's going to want peace, that is going to be brave enough to lead their people in a different way. And so this is the way we need to start. And we need to not think about 5 years, 10 years. We need to think about 20 years, 30 years, 50 years. Because if we want to fight these ideas of radical Islam, this is a mutual war that we're fighting against Iran. By the way, also Qatar, mm-hmm. who's spreading those ideas as well. Turkey, who has started to spread those ideas as well. We have to be honest about the sources of those ideas, and we have to fight them together. And the only way to fight it is not later on in life. It starts with education. It starts with the zero tolerance towards these ideas, first at home, and then on relationships with other countries.
It's interesting. I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, you guys are going through all of this right now, and the country has a long history of going through these things. You're much better set up to fight them than we are in America, where we don't fight these things that well. We're too soft on some of those ideas of liberty and freedom and things.
I think, like,
and certainly Western Europe was worse than us in that sense.
I'll tell you what, I have seen sort of a rise of patriotism in America as well, when they see what they're facing. This is happening now in the younger generation, I think. Mm-hmm. And it's very important to understand that a generation that never had to fight for their freedom and their liberty do not understand the cost and the price that others paid so that they can live, so that they can have those liberties, those rights. And, you know, freedom is something that is only a generation away from being eliminated. Okay? And you really have to understand it's not something that you can take for granted. And if people take it for granted, then they don't act. Then they don't participate. Okay? They don't participate in elections. They don't participate in debates. They push it aside and they let other people dictate that their future, you know?
You're saying a lot of the things that I talk about on my show, and when I was doing some research on you before, you describe yourself as a classical liberal, or at least you've been described as a classical liberal, and I was thinking, are you the only person in Knesset that would say that? I mean, people say they're conservatives or they're Likud member party, you know, party members, etc. But you, I mean, you've laid out the ideas of classical liberalism here.
Yeah, I think I'm probably the only one who, and I've been in parliament for 9 years now almost, and I'm the only one who's time after time was willing to pay prices, political prices, prices in the media, you know, to fight and to stand on those principles. And that's why, you know, we have the new liberal movement that they describe, and they try to rate parliament members on their legislations, their votings, remarks in regards to individual liberties, economical liberties, classic liberal. Mm-hmm. And for the last 9 years, every time they did a poll, I've came up as the first. So I've won, like, you know, as the most liberal mm-hmm. parliament member, but classical liberal, progressive liberal.
Right, of course. How do we stop that slide? Because the classical liberals, I mean, I wrote a book about this, the classical liberals, unfortunately, so many of them have slid into progressivism, at least in America. You guys, your woke thing isn't quite as bad here.
I don't think that the classic liberal has slid into that. I think that the progressives have hijacked that mm-hmm. word to use it to sound not just better, but as an ideology and something that is very open-minded, where yeah. it's not. I mean, I hope I pronounce it right. The progressivism.
Yeah.
Okay.
You got it.
You know, it's not about giving someone else the freedom to make their choices, or to make their own opinion. It's about forcing your own opinion and your own values on someone else, and that contradicts the liberal idea.
Course.
So it's easy to hijack that in this idea of pluralism and acceptance, but you can't force that on someone. Then you take from someone else their liberty of freedom of thoughts and opinions and speech, you know, or you can't say something like that. No, you can say everything. We need to discuss everything. If we shut up about something and we do not discuss it, or we do not address it, it's not that it doesn't exist. It exists, but only we ignore the problem. So, and you know what? The thing is that the two, it's being more polarized to the extremes because there isn't a discussion. Because some people think that you're not allowed to say certain things in a certain way. So they're not listening to the other side. Mm-hmm. And when you're not listening, if you're not conversing with the other side. You live in your own bubble with your own idea, and you just push anything else. It's not productive, and it only creates more polarization and more extremism.
I have to say, I'm glad you're fighting for the word liberalism. It's gotten hard for me to do, because I was like the classical liberal in America, and then they so hijacked the word, you're right. They hijacked it, that I stopped using it because it started getting confusing to people. So I'm glad that it's kind of taking root. Did you say there's a new liberal movement here?
Is it
a political party?
It's not a political party, but a social organization that spread these idea, like the idea of Ayn Rand.
Yeah.
And Ayn Rand is sort of a philosopher with her idea. And the idea is to sort of discuss it and spread it and introduce the younger generation to those ideas. Because the philosophy of socialism and communism are so widespread here in Israel that we are trying to sort of give open the mind of the younger generation to more ideas, to understand it and to make their own decisions. Margaret Thatcher, which is a hero to me, and she's a role model, and when you look on it from a philosophical way, many people are sort of attacking her. But she did incredible things for the economy. Until today, the English economy, in the UK, is based on the principle of what she set up, bringing it to such high level. I mean, trying to debate in social circles and with these movements who are talking to youth, creating events, bringing different books and doing podcasts and bringing lecture guests from all around the world to speak about these ideas is critical.
I know a guy who wrote a pretty good book about this stuff.
Yeah?
We're going to send you a copy.
Okay, yeah. I'd love to. Yeah.
I've thoroughly enjoyed talking to you. Do you have anything that you want to leave the people with? Maybe something that they don't know about Israel that they should in this bizarre time of untruth?
I think that until you come here to Israel, it's really hard to understand the essence and what it really is. Because so many people will describe it in so many different way. But when you come here, you get a completely different picture. You know, there's many people who speak about Israel as, they spread lies as if Israel's like this apartheid state, like it doesn't have any minority. But it's the exact opposite. Israel is this proof that no matter how diverse your community is, because we have here Israeli Arabs, Israeli Christians, Muslims, Druze, Bedouin, Cherkess, and many more minorities, Samaritans, who actually live here side by side. We work together, we study together, we get treatments together in hospitals, which is a complete contradiction to those ideas. Mm-hmm. The head of the Nahariya Hospital, he's from an Arab minority. In our high Supreme Court, we have judges from an Arab minorities. Now try and imagine a Jewish high Supreme Court judge in Syria,
right,
or Lebanon, or even the Palestinian Authority. Never. Okay? Here in our political system, in parliament, we have two, not one, but two Arab parties who are representing minorities with different ideas. Okay? Now try and think about the Iranian parliament. Mm-hmm. Or the Iraqi parliament, would they have Jewish parties in them? And yet you constantly hear from that side as if Israel is this apartheid state. Israel is a proof that no matter how diverse your community is, democracy and the values of liberty and freedom is possible. That's the proof. And you know what? That's what our neighboring country are so afraid of. Many of them are dictatorships, that don't want to give freedom and liberties or democracy to their citizens, proof that it can't function with a diverse community like Iraq and Lebanon and Syria, which are their main conflicts, is because of the diversity of the population. Mm-hmm. And so they're afraid of that. They're afraid of Israel spreading those ideas. It's an isle of liberty and democracy in the pure essence of it. And many people need to come and see and understand that.
And that's how you end an interview.
Thanks for tuning in to The Rubin Report. You can watch the show live every weekday at 11 a.m. Eastern and 8 a.m. Pacific on Rumble, Locals, and YouTube. Don't forget to rate, review, share, and subscribe to this podcast. And you can join me for the postgame wrap-up every day after the show at rubinreport.locals.com.